is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Defense Soap revolutionized athletic hygiene in 2005 with the introduction of a bar soap containing natural ingredients proven to be effective against skin infections common to wrestlers. Today, Defense Soap leads the world in sports hygiene innovation with a complete line of bar soaps, shower gels, and body wipes that contain high-grade tea tree, eucalyptus, and peppermint oils. Defense Soap. Defend what you have built at DefenseSoap.com. Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at WorldWrestlingResource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall.
World Wrestling Resource Podcast here on location to Trnava, Slovakia at the 2018 Junior World Championships with Pedro Silva, the president of the Portuguese Wrestling Federation. Chairman of the Mediterranean Committee. He's running for a board member position in Budapest coming up. And Pedro, we've gotten to know each other over the last couple of years, and always good to see a friendly face at the event. You are always the sharpest dressed guy here at an event. It's got to be hot sometimes.
Yeah, but first of all, it's a pleasure, and thank you for the kind words. But being Portuguese, we are used to putting up with hot weather, and so it comes with the territory.
When people think wrestling, Portugal is usually not the first country that comes to mind. Talk a little bit about what the wrestling culture is like in Portugal and the history and what the wrestling community is like there.
Portugal is obviously known for its soccer, but the wrestling community, not being not nearly as big as soccer, it has a lot of tradition. We are one of the oldest established national federations, national governing bodies amongst all the sports in Portugal. I like to say we are not big, but we are good.
The one Portuguese athlete I have a history with comes from my time at Old Dominion University with Tisha Penachara, a basketball player, a just phenomenal athlete. And so that was my first experience with Portugal, and then we've seen some wrestlers come out. Matter of fact, one of the wrestlers that represents Portugal, I believe, is deaf, correct?
Yeah, he's transitioning now to a coaching position within the federation, and I believe he's a true example of how great wrestling is, that a deaf athlete can perform at the highest level. He was an Olympian. He was a silver medalist in a European championship. So I believe he's a true poster boy for wrestling and for the integration of disabled athletes.
We're talking Hugo Passos, who's been around for quite a long time. One of the older guys, as you said, he's transitioning into coaching. And when we talk about the development of wrestling around the world from a president position in your wrestling federation, what do you guys do in Portugal to try to, you know, raise awareness of wrestling and grow it at the grassroots level?
Well, we have some programs that try to integrate and cooperate between the school system and the club system, which doesn't work like in the States. So we try to do some programs in promotion in schools. It's part of the curricula of PE classes till the 12th grade. From 6th to 12th grade, we have wrestling in PE curriculum. We try to promote within national TV. All our events have a brief reportage on national TV. We do some promotion programs in some communities, something like the Beat the Streets program in the States. We have our equivalent in Portugal, and we try to work also around social media. That's the way to connect with a younger audience. And step by step, we try to do that kind of work, knowing that we are in a country where soccer overtakes pretty much of the attention of all sports.
When athletes come through Portugal and they're looking to train, and, you know, training in different countries is not abnormal, one thing that Americans that don't travel a lot don't really realize is how inexpensive it is to really travel from one country to another in Europe. Just talk about how the these nations work together with training situations and how that, synergy really is universal.
Portugal is in the far west of Europe, so we might be the less privileged country in Europe for that matter. But take Trnava as an example. We are in Slovakia, and I flew in through Vienna, which is the next country over, and I'm probably as far from the Vienna airport as I am from my hotel here. So it's quite inexpensive. It's quite easy to just pick up a bus or a train or a car and travel to two, three different countries within, I don't know, two, 3 hours, 4 hours travel time.
You had an interesting opportunity recently to spend time in Turkmenistan at in Ashgabat at the for the Asian what indoor combat games. What is that event, and how did wrestling play into it, and what is the country like?
The country is quite peculiar, to choose wisely my words. The event was a huge event. We have 11 days of wrestling. We have all the associated styles. We have Alish, belt wrestling, traditional wrestling, Pahlavani, Kazakh Kuresh. So, and apart from the three Olympic styles. So it was quite interesting from that perspective. And it was quite interesting to see an arena of 15,000 seats packed throughout the 11 days of competition. Turkmenistan is a peculiar country that loves wrestling, but is a very close country. It has a political regime that's, I wouldn't call it a democracy by any stretch of the imagination. So it had some challenges to overcome during the organization, but I think that all things considered, it was a very successful event for everyone, and especially for the athletes who are the ones that count the most.
When you are at events where they have some of these associated styles, like if you have beach wrestling or belt wrestling, or you know the Turkish oil wrestling, for instance, and you put it together with the Olympic styles, how much do you think that helps what United World Wrestling is trying to do with its global outreach and bring people in more into the Olympic fold?
I think it helps a lot. I think we get bigger if we get people together instead of breaking them apart. Last year, the finals of the Beach Wrestling Worlds in Turkey were simultaneously held with Gureş, the Kirkpinar, the traditional oil wrestling. And we had probably over 7,000 people watching the finals of the Beach Wrestling and of the Kirkpinar. That probably, if we held the events separately, we wouldn't have that many people watching both events. So it was good for the promotion of both events. It was perfect for the athletes because they had bigger crowds and everybody got more knowledgeable about the different styles within the United World Wrestling umbrella.
When we come here now and, you know, we're talking about running for Bureau member, how is the Bureau made up, and what are some benefits you feel that you could bring to the Bureau?
The Bureau members are responsible for setting the direction and ruling the evolution of the sport. I was a former wrestler. I was a coach, a technical director, competition manager, a referee at some point. And now I have the honor and the privilege and the responsibility of being the president of a federation and a committee that englobes 26 countries from three different continents. On top of that, I'm able to speak five different languages. So I think I can put all that experience at service for United World Wrestling, standing in the Bureau, serving my passion for over 30 years. Whatever are my skill sets, I wish strongly to put them at the service of United World Wrestling, serving at the Bureau.
I'm assuming Portuguese, because you're from Portugal. You got English down. What are the other three languages?
French, Spanish, and Italian.
What was the hardest one to learn?
I would say Probably Italian, because it's the one I practice the least. But it's not that... I would say I'm naturally prone to learning different languages. And being Portuguese culturally, we always try to learn the other guy's language. So if I was speaking with someone from China, more than wanting him, even if I was in Portugal, more than wanting him to speak my language, I would be interested in learning his language.
And Portuguese isn't really a widely spoken language outside of Brazil and Portugal. You'll get it in some of the words. It's there's similarities in bits and pieces to Spanish I learned in my trips to Rio, but it's one of those things that you're almost forced to learn another language, right?
Yeah, even though Portuguese is the fifth most spoken language in the world, it's spoken in all the former Portuguese colonies, like five or six countries in Africa, one or two in Asia, Brazil, obviously, with over 200 million speakers. The advantage of speaking Portuguese, first of all, that our school system promotes us to learn at least two other languages. But because it's one of the Romance languages, Latin-based, it's quite easy for us to learn Spanish, French, and Italian. So it's not the same, but it makes it pretty much easy.
Traveling the world, Budapest is a relevant spot as we're coming up on the five-year anniversary of saving wrestling, bringing it back, and getting a rule set that is more exciting. The ball draw era is gone. The tennis style scoring periods is gone. What are your general thoughts on where we've come in the last 5 years?
Oh, we've come a long way. It's tremendous the changes we've made so far and the improvements we've made so far. I think it's quite important that we keep the momentum going, that we don't believe that our job is done. Our job is never done, and it's that attitude that I want to bring to the bureau if I'm elected. It's clearly more fair, the rule book. It puts the decision more and more on the athlete and not on chance. I think we've come a long way there. We came a long way on competition management. Like what we see here in Trnava and what I'm sure we'll see in Budapest in a month, or what we saw last year in Paris, it's quite an improvement over some or most of the competitions before 2013. Convinced we are moving on the right direction, and I believe we'll be able to keep the momentum going and keep on improving every day.
You talked about the competition venues and such. If you look around at this facility, it's a little dated, but it's got branding all over it. There is UWW everything. I mean, even the bleachers have this hard cardboard padding, so you're not looking at stale wooden bleachers. The mat colors are they are a lot more conducive to being good on television. So, what is when something as simple as the mat colors? How much do you think that that's impacted the visibility of the sport and how marketable it is?
Well, if you look at the competitions before this Extreme Makeover Wrestling Edition we did,
well said.
Just on the look side of things, this looks nice. You wouldn't feel embarrassed to bring any of your friends to come and see this event or any other event for that matter. While before, you might need to pick the right event to bring someone and show it, this is my sport. This, I'm sure it looks great. Well, it looks great here. I'm sure it looks great on TV. It looks great on the streaming. And this is where we can showcase our sport, our love. And we need to take good care of it. Like if you dress up properly to a party, why wouldn't you do the same for the sport that you love? And I think that's quite important. We came a long way on those aspects. Like, even if you watch the flow, the call room, the way the basket carriers assist the coaches, assist the athletes, this doesn't not only looks good, but it suits the needs, the demands of the teams, of the athletes, which, once again, I would like to emphasize, it's the most important part of the sport. It's why we are all here for.
getting back in the Olympics, you know, there was a lot of flack. And as an American, there was a lot of flack and pressure on USA Wrestling. Like, you know, some detractors were blaming us at USA Wrestling for this. What type of blowback were you getting in Portugal from wrestling fans there? Were they blaming Portugal and you guys for part of this fall as well?
No, we have quite the opposite reaction. A lot of people within the sports movement and outside of the sports movement fell outraged by the just the proposal of wrestling being excluded of the Olympic program. I have more television and media exposure than any other time during my lifetime. I would give half an hour long interviews on national television on prime time. And everybody would feel outraged, like, even if wrestling did something wrong or if it's not perfect or it needs to improve, cutting it out of the Olympics is not the answer. So correct whatever you need to correct, but keep wrestling in the Olympics. Like, the basic feeling was wrestling is in the core of the Olympic movement with athletics. If there are two sports you cannot cut, it's wrestling and athletics. That was the general consensus of everyone in Portugal. Even though I think that fatidic February 12th, 2013 was a blessing in disguise, because it gave us the opportunity to change, to grow, to improve, and to keep on improving still today.
What's been your favorite change over the last 5 years?
I'm not sure if I can pinpoint something. I would say, probably not being too specific, the mentality change of all wrestling diehard fan all over the world. The way we see the sport and the way we see changed dramatically after that 2013 season, from February 12th till November 8th, I believe, September.
And we talk about the marketability of wrestling. Last year, we saw something that was great drama. You couldn't have written it in like a Hollywood movie. You know, the Russian versus the American, the team title on the line, two world champions, an Olympic champions meeting. From an outside, I'm biased because I'm an American in this respect, but what did that look like from a Portuguese perspective?
Oh, it looked amazing. It's like the Boros Chamizo this year. It's what we need. Being Portuguese, so not being biased, not having a dog in the fight, of course, we all have our personal preferences, but what I really like about the Abdullayev Snyder last year, or the Chamizo Boros this year, is that the fact that we don't know who's going to win. Anything can happen. Anything can happen mindset is what we need. It's like a Rocky movie. Like, till the last minute, you don't know what's going to happen. You're guessing, but sometimes Rocky lost, and sometimes he won. The fact that you don't know, it's what keeps you stuck to the match. And I'm looking forward seeing probably Boros Chamizo 3 Budapest. Hopefully they'll match up again, and it will be quite interesting to see. We need more of those unpredictable challenges.
One thing we're also seeing has been the implementation of a ranking series. You know, the name Grand Prix has been thrown around a lot at different tournaments, but it really wasn't a true Grand Prix. Other sports like tennis have a computerized ranking system with a lot of events. And what do you see from the visibility of these events there? It seems like, okay, wow, this is going to be a ranking series event, and it's going to be a draw, and UWW's getting behind it. It's not just like, okay, here's the Federation, you go run this tournament, we'll take the results. There's an effort from the International Federation to help out these national federations.
I think it's quite important to have a proper, clearly set, clearly ruled out ranking series. We are trying, UWW is trying to do the same with beach wrestling, creating a beach wrestling world series with a ranking. It's probably easier for beach wrestling because we are starting from scratch than it is for the Olympic styles, because we are not starting from scratch and we have to balance the history behind with the goals we as a sport want to achieve. But I think that clearly it will be better for everyone involved if we have a ranking system. that is promoted by UWW. It will be good for media because it's easier to understand. It's the number one ranked athlete in the world versus number 10 than to just throw two names that outside media won't know. It's better for the new fans because they can immediately assess the level of the guys involved. Probably it's better for sponsors and promoters and all those commercial aspects of the sport. So I think there's a long way to go, but I think it's the way to go. And I'm looking forward for the next developments. I'm sure the next couple of years will be quite interesting in the development of that ranking series.
Circling back to, as we sit up here at this at the table where the Bureau members and the International Federation presidents sit, what about the job Nenad Lalovic has done? He's had a wrestling background, but he was mainly a businessman coming in and kind of been a stable figurehead for the organization. What are some things that he's done maybe behind the scenes that maybe the wrestling world doesn't realize that he's had a real big impact in?
I think as a wrestling lifelong fan, we could never be thankful enough for the role the president Nenad Lalovic has put in for United World Wrestling. He is the head and the main responsible of this Extreme Makeover Wrestling edition that's been a humongous success. All these changes that we have been talking about here in wrestling, and also the recognition that the Olympic movement and the IOC have made to his job are quite visible with his current position as a IOC board member. That is to say a lot of his ability to lead this change process and to bring wrestling to a position where it should be and promoting the continuous improvement and development of our sport. I don't think it would be fair to say or to mention a specific thing because that would be not valuing all the other things that have been done. He is the leader and the head of this global continuous improvement movement that we've seen since 2013.
One thing that we've seen an improvement on is the emphasis on the age group levels. Yeah, there's a U15 division now. We have had a successful Cadet World Championships here, and Trnava has been a great host. Like, again, it looks great. The people are friendly. I mean, you're not just putting it somewhere to put it somewhere. And then we're going into Budapest. There's a real effort to make the World Championships pop, but these age group levels, that's where the development is. And how have the improved predicament of the cadets and junior levels really helped wrestling in Portugal?
Yeah, they definitely helps improve. And it helps us to, even from a fundraising perspective, if we start competing at the schoolboys, the under 15, the under 17, result gaps from a small country like Portugal to the big powerhouses is not as big. And we can get more government support and more sponsor support promoting youth talent and getting some results back or some performance highlights from younger kids, and that is one of the tools that we have in Portugal to make everybody aware of the work we are doing. If we are only expecting a senior level medal, it comes once in the blue moon, but it's easier to get a medal match at least on a younger age group, and that it's a good way to raise awareness within the local authorities or the national government, but also it's easier to attract more kids that go to the same school as the kid who had a good result or are from the same city or the same province. It's easier to promote and attract more resources and more people.
Which brings me back to another point. As in the United States, as our fans know, there's the government doesn't fund the Olympic sports. I mean, you're raising money, fundraising. How does the funding structure work in Portugal for Olympic sports?
Well, we are underfunded, clearly, not just we wrestling, but the vast majority of the sports. There's not a lot of government money. The government money, it comes from the national and European lotteries. So a percentage of that is given to the promotion of sports, amateur sports. And I would say over 90% of the money comes from there. We try to get some sponsors. It's not easy. Now the economy in all of Europe is getting better, but during the bailout years and the IMF and all of that, it was quite easy, quite hard to get any outside sponsoring. But it's getting slightly better now. It's easier to get not cash sponsors, but like supplier kind of deals, like giving us not money, but gear, equipment, or a hall to train, or city hall that hosts national training camps, stuff like that. But unlike the States, we are majority government subsidized.
Anything you'd like to add about sport of wrestling, what we're seeing here, what you're looking forward to in Budapest?
Well, I'm looking forward in Budapest to a magnificent event. The Hungarian Wrestling Federation has used the world to a very high level of competition organization. The last World Championships there in 2013 were quite amazing. I'm expecting the same in Budapest. And hopefully I'm expecting to be elected board member if I have the confidence of the country delegates.
Pedro, thanks for the time. We'll see you in a month.
See you in a month. It's a pleasure.
Subscribe to the World Wrestling Resource Podcast by going to WWRpodcast.com and check it out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, or wherever you find your podcasts. World Wrestling Resource at worldwrestlingresource.com.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.